As men, we can become preoccupied with financial success. I've certainly felt that at times myself. But the team and I have designed a quiz that's going to help you improve your intentions to achieve better results for your career and business. And there's a link to it in the show notes. I'll tell you more at the end of this episode, but for now, enjoy listening.
19 years old and a full life ahead of me. I've got instant regrets because I've gone down a different path from that happy-go-lucky bloke. I'm angry.
Welcome to Stories of Men, Beneath the Surface. I'm Alex Melia. Join me as we discover what it means to be a man in the modern era. If you live in the UK, gambling is a part of everyday life. If you don't have the apps downloaded on your phone, there's normally one or two bookies on your local high street, sometimes even more. 44% of men declared that they had gambled on at least one bet in the past year. But for some people, it can become an addiction, and a dangerous one at that. Andy was struggling with his gambling to the point where he'd become entwined with nearly every aspect of his life. One day, when he felt like the weight of the world was on his shoulders, he decided to go for a drive.
I got on the M1 just south of Derby, headed towards Leicester. I thought to myself, let's build the speed. Let's get that thrill. We're from 50, 60, 70, 80. Pressing down as hard as I can. Weaving in and out of cars, in and out of the lanes, so I could keep on going faster. It's giving me that buzz, that feeling, that adrenaline rush, knowing something that could go wrong at any minute. I got my music on full blast. It was one of my favourite tracks as well. Everyone knows me by this song. Entrance, Set You Free, what a song. I can just switch off. As I'm in that car, that song takes me back to 1999. Ibiza, clubbing with my friends, dancing on a table without a care in the world. It's the peak of my life. 19 years old and a full life ahead of me. I've got instant regrets because I've gone down a different path from that happy-go-lucky bloke. I'm angry. I'm upset at myself. I feel destructive. I can feel myself tensing up. My arms starting to shake. I need to rub my hands together. I take my hands off the steering wheel, wiping away all the sweat from my hands. Still controlling the car with no hands. I need to challenge myself. I'm going to get to 15 seconds. I close my eyes. 1, 2, 3. I get to 6. The adrenaline rush is kicking in. Bit more like a roller coaster. That feeling of being not protected within my car. It feels good. 7, 8, 9. I can hear other cars whilst I'm driving past them in that middle lane. I'm in my cloud. I'm in my bubble. I don't feel protected. But I don't care. 11. 12, 13, 14. This is it. I just don't want to be here anymore. Then all of a sudden, an image came into my head. A beautiful girl, smiling away. That beautiful smile. It's my wedding day. It's my wife coming down the aisle. Absolutely happy. I can't leave that behind. How can I? 15. Then I open my eyes, startled. Snap out of it. I relax. The foot comes off the accelerator. I slow down. I get over to the inside lane. I pull over. I come to a halt. I sit there for a minute, thinking about what I've just done. I let go of the handbrake, indicate, wait for a space, and pull back on the motorway. I pull up outside my house. Ah, yeah, you're right, she says. Yeah, I'm fine. Had a good day. How's you? Yeah, busy day at work. Well, I'm glad to be home.
Andy, it seemed like the absolute world was on your shoulders, not just on that day, but on many days that were probably leading up to that. And then you go back home and you pretend everything's okay.
Yeah, I was in disarray. I was living like hand to mouth day by day. Everyone on the service had everything that I ever wanted. People could probably see what I ever wanted. I've got a lovely wife. I've got a lovely home. I've got a great job, nice car. I get to go on holidays when I wanted. But scratching that surface beneath it, I was a broken man. Addiction had broken me. I knew it was, but I didn't know how to deal with it. I felt alone. I felt ashamed and I felt embarrassed.
Yeah, it's all about this putting this mask on that everything's okay. And the person that's closest to you in your life at that time, your wife, who you'd been married to for a year at that time, she didn't have a clue. And you're still putting on that face that everything's okay when you come back home.
I thought, like I say again, I was ashamed and I knew I was probably doing something wrong. I knew it, but I didn't know how to make it right. And I thought the only way to make it right was to carry on doing what I was doing within the gambling. And that sets off more lies. I was lying to myself. I used to believe that I was all right. Doing those normal things made me feel like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm all right. But then I'm not. I know I'm not deep inside. I thought the only way out every time to make myself happy, to kill the problems that I had inside, was to gamble. It was the cure, but it was also the cause.
It seems like there were two different men that day, two different sides of Andy, if you want to call them masks or even different people. You're in this self-destructive mode on the motorway, then you come back home and you're a completely different person.
Yeah, it's just like a flick the switch. And that's how I felt I was like as a person in my life during that time, during that era. I was in disarray, complete disarray. And like I say, on the face of it, I looked like a normal bloke, happy bloke, without a care in the world. Always trying to do stuff for everybody. I've always been like that. I've always like tried to look after everybody else but myself. And I think that was a problem as well. I wanted to make sure people are always well looked after without realising that I needed looking after myself.
I've definitely been in that position before where you're putting everyone ahead of yourself. I'm the oldest of four siblings. When they have a problem, they come to me and you're constantly helping other people. But after a while, you think, actually, I'm having a couple of issues here. But it's like I can't reach out to those siblings or I can't reach out to other people. Did you feel something kind of similar in terms of your mentality?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was brought up in an era where the bloke, the man in the house, was responsible for everything. So it kind of followed suit, so to speak, that the bloke's got to be big and strong. And I hate the saying, but you always man up to every problem. That mask and hiding away all your own deep problems, deep-rooted problems inside, you have to look strong. You have to look like the one who's helping everybody else. Be that resilient man. But I was far from it. I was in bits inside and I was getting to the point where I couldn't cope. I knew I needed help, but I didn't know where to get it. I felt ashamed because of that stigma where a bloke never has any problems. You don't talk about it. You don't need to talk about it. Talking about it is weak. It's weak to speak. Can't show your vulnerabilities. You can show you care, but you also show that you're big and strong. And that was my mentality.
And this man up term that you mentioned is something we've grown up with, right? From primary school, you fall over or something like that. You graze your knee and you see a kid crying because they've fallen over or whatever, and it's all man up. You can't man up when you're 7 years old, but we still have this inbred in the society, isn't it?
Like you say, back then in the 80s, 90s, growing up, you had to mask how you're feeling. A woman could, a lady could, quite easily. I mean, she could show how she felt. But I'm being very stereotypical and very generic, obviously. It's kind of embedded into our heads. Girls are emotional, but boys are big and strong. When it's far from the case, as we know today in society, that it's okay to talk. It's not weak to speak. It's fine for a man to cry. It's fine for a man to be upset. It's fine to go out and talk and get help that you might need mentally. It's fine.
Your story made me think of the huge Norwich City video. I don't want to call it necessarily an awareness video, recently went on. I think it had something like 40 million downloads or something like that. And it's been huge. And it's talked about male suicide and how this one guy seems happy and everything's great in his life. And then there's another guy who's looking depressed. And at the end of it, it ends up being the guy who comes across as happy. You know, they're in the Norwich City's Carrow Road Stadium watching the games. And he's the one who's jumping up and down every time they score. But at the end, it's the guy who they perceive to be the depressed guy who's actually putting the scarf on the seat as a kind of remembrance to this happy go lucky sort of guy who killed himself. And it seems to be very much parallels with your story.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I used to go to the match, I had a season ticket at Derby, and I used to go with like one or two friends or my father sometimes, and I'll be there, I'll be happy. I'll be singing, shouting along and cheering or kicking off if we're losing, etc. But what we all go through in emotions of a football game, I was that guy in that video, that Norwich City video. I was that guy who's masking it, who looks on the surface to be absolutely happy, buzzing to be at a football match, wanting to talk about it and everything. I'm quite a sociable guy. It's like when I go on holiday, I was one of these guys who'll talk to anybody in the hotel, by the pool, whatever, go and strike up a conversation. I've always been that guy. But I was masking everything. It's probably one of my coping mechanisms in a way, just to keep my mind off other things. And to a degree, it might have worked, but obviously I needed help. I wanted to get the help, but I just didn't know how I could. And I felt ashamed and embarrassed because of the stigma.
Yeah, and there's still a huge stigma in society about it right now. Even though there is more awareness around suicidal thoughts and feeling very low as a man, can't show any weakness.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's changed a lot. I think it's come very far last 10 years, 5 years, definitely. We've got to keep showing it is okay to talk about life, talk about your struggles. It's also okay not to talk about me if you don't want to. I think trust plays a big part in this as well. As I say, back in the day, you've talked to probably question everything and not trust anybody. And certain elements of life, you can be fine doing that, and that's fine. But it's probably finding trust in somebody to open up and talk to and building up that trust. And it's a big stigma for some who probably can't do that.
So this was what, 2006, 17 years ago, you've got the love of your life who knows you probably better than anyone else. And that was kind of indicative of your mindset at the time and the times that we live in, that you had that trust with her, but you still couldn't speak to her about how you felt.
No, I couldn't, because I had to be the big, strong man, the big wage earner. My wife had a decent job as well, but I took it upon myself to have the bank account. She had her own bank account. She paid a set amount each month to part the bills. I didn't want to take 50-50. It was the man thing to do. Pay the majority of the bills, keep the upkeep of the house, help clean around the house as well at times, but she was the one who did most of that as well. And that was indicative of the society at the time. But yeah, I was like, I couldn't open up to her. I just felt it'd be weak. Even now, I knew she'd probably helped me. To this day, she would have done. And judging since, she's still my wife now. She put up hell of a lot through my life, but she stood by me. And if I said something there and then, I might have got help I needed. I might not spiral through everything in control.
That's the thing about vulnerability you talked about before. The more that men are vulnerable, they almost become stronger, because it is a difficult thing to be vulnerable as a man, I think, because it's not expected of you in society. So the irony is that you probably would have become, you would have got closer to your wife at that time if you'd have shown your vulnerabilities. But it's just, if it's not something you've ever done before, how can you just be expected to do it one day?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it probably lays testament to the time again as well. I think nowadays, if I was going through the exact same thing, I've got so many more resources. I can listen to so many more people. I can listen to podcasts. I can listen to people, look at professional sportsmen who talk about mental health to this day. You can look at the likes of Tyson Fury, who struggled, opening up, wide open. Other sports people as well, people you look up to and you think, wow, yeah, I've done that. I'm thinking that. I feel that. And it's them role models that help you open up nowadays. Back then, I don't think mental health was a bit of a taboo subject, especially around men. You don't talk about it. It's brushed under the carpet. You forget about it. And I'm glad society has changed from that time where I was driving that car and closing my eyes and believing I've got no help, to thinking about 27-year-old me back then. If I was 27 years old now, I'd have that support. I'd have that belief that it's okay to talk about how you're feeling and not be ashamed or embarrassed.
Yeah, sports stars and people in the public eye, they do help a lot in this area, I think, because like you use the example of Tyson Fury, the amount of millions of guys that look up to him. I mean, everyone's looking up to him. He's what, 6'9" or whatever he is. But those kinds of people show that it's not something that you need to be embarrassed about to talk about how you feel.
And it's also, it can happen to absolutely anybody. Absolutely anybody. If you're talking in terms of my addiction, I've sat with people who have been on the streets on one side of me and another bloke in his mid-50s, successful millionaire. And we're all going through the exact same thing. It knows no bounds, addiction or mental health issues. It knows, it has no barriers to affect anybody.
And that goes nicely into gambling. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about that, because what you just said about, you've got two different men on either side of you. You could go into the bookmakers, or you could, wherever you bet or you gamble, going into a casino, you could have some guy who looks really scruffy, like he could be some homeless guy on one side. And on the other side, you could have a guy in a really pristine suit with a briefcase. You know, a gambling addiction affects all different kinds of men from all different walks of life.
Yeah, they call it the silent addiction. We talk about drugs and alcohol, and you can see the physical effects. You can see me face to face at the moment. You wouldn't be able to tell I was a gambling addict or a compulsive gambler or whatever you want to reference me. And yeah, exactly. And they call it the silent addiction for a reason. We hide it away for so long. And that probably goes back to what I was talking about earlier as well, the shame, the embarrassment. It's more of a shameful addiction in my eyes, because you know you're probably not doing it. You probably know in your deep mind if you're going to be if you're alcoholic or you're struggling with drugs, it might be a bad thing to do. It might be affecting my life. But gambling, it absolutely brains you, to put it in a crude term. And I was just so focused. Every time I woke up in the morning, coming off a night shift, I'd be up at 9 o'clock in the morning, wake up. First thing I'm thinking about, what I'm going to have a bet on today. What can I play today? How can I get myself out of a hole today? I know what, I can gamble. It just affected my life. I gambled from a young age. I was gambling from the age of 14, but I was all right for a hell of a long time. I was just gambling on things I understood for so long, like football and horse racing. I got that big win in a poker tournament in around late 2005. I beat 700 people in a poker tournament. It took me 5 hours to win. I won $5,000. That was like a couple of months' wages in 5 hours. And I safely say that was the worst thing that could ever happen to me. Because I thought I could win $10,000. I thought I could win $20,000. I thought I could win $100,000. Thought, why should I go to work at Toyota feeling stinky, filthy, greasy when all I had to do is win it online or win it in a bookies?
That's this idea of the fact that right now people would be thinking in their jobs, you know, if they are starting to go along that gambling journey, they think to themselves, well, I can work a lot for a little bit of money, or I could do it, just flip it the other way around and work a little bit for a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just like chasing. And with it, like I say, within the space of 6 months, I'd maxed out 4 credit cards 2 times and I got 2 loans. I went from controlling my gambling for so long. I loved horse racing. It was my baby. And I never let that get out of control. But everything else, poker, I went from playing tournaments where, like, at £10 to enter and just playing the tournaments, and if I got knocked out and it cost me £10, to playing, having 4 different cash tables, gambling on every hand, 4 different games opened up, blackjack on the side, gambling on cartoon horse racing. If there was 2 flies going up against the wall, if I could, I would bet on which one would get the highest. I just lost it, lost all control. And there was regrets within my gambling. I mean, when I know it sounds daft, and probably still to this day, I loved it. I loved gambling. And I loved the thrill, loved the chase, the rush. As I'd probably described earlier, that feeling of like going fast in a car, being on a roller coaster, it gave me that thrill. I shouldn't probably have been doing it, but it was there. It was that chase, it was that ultimate buzz. Even when I won or lost, I wasn't bothered. I had to do it.
Let me ask you a question. Are you a man that has a wife, kids, great house, great job, couple of holidays a year, but you still feel some sort of void in your life? Almost like there's something missing. This is something I hear a lot when interviewing our guests for Stories of Men, and it's an aspect of modern manhood that I just can't seem to quite figure out, but I'm always exploring it. Everything looks great on the surface, but you know deep inside you feel something is missing. It reminds me of a quote from Sigmund Freud that I read recently, and it said, "Life as we find it is too hard for us. It brings us too many pains, disappointments, and impossible tasks. In order to bear it, we cannot dispense with palliative measures. There are perhaps 3 such measures: powerful deflections, which cause us to make light of our misery, substitutive satisfactions, which diminish it, and intoxicating substances, which make us insensible to it." And I guess gambling actually encompasses all 3 of those things. It's intoxicating, it's a substitute, and it's a deflection of everyday life. Andy wasn't just gambling at the bookies or on his phone. It had seemingly slipped into almost every facet of his being. The fact that he was trying to feel something by gambling with his own life on the motorway, by closing his eyes and taking his hands off the wheel while driving, and not just his own life, but that of others too. He was constantly living in this win-lose mentality. Win he lives, lose he dies, and potentially takes other people on the motorway with him. I know really well about this win-lose mentality, and I've lived it myself. It's definitely the ego talking, and we've got to ask ourselves, how do we get away from this mindset? Andy has since been in recovery for his addiction and helps others through theirs by talking about it. It's important to know that if you're listening, no matter how far down the addiction pathway you are, there's always help available and a way out. There's loads of great information and educational things to read at epicriskmanagement.com. That's E-P-I-C, riskmanagement.com. I mentioned at the start about us as men caring a lot about financial success. The truth is, we all want to make money and excel in our work. But understanding what drives us to our definition of success is important. That's why the team and I have designed a simple, easy quiz that's going to help you learn a lot about yourself and help set realistic targets for success. It takes less than 3 minutes to complete. We as men can be incredibly successful, driven individuals, but how we get there is important to understand, particularly for our mental health. Through the man quiz, you'll answer questions about your identity as a modern man. The aim is to better understand who you are, to achieve the results you want in your life and work. Click the link to the quiz in the show notes now. You never know, you might just learn something new about yourself that you didn't know before.